This is Steve Goodrich, known on the trail as Bird Shooter, and this is N2 Backpacking, a podcast for both hikers and backpackers. Hey, this is Bird Shooter. Welcome to episode number 21 at N2 Backpacking. Tonight on the show, we've got J.D. Schlant, who's going to talk about the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. It's the most visited national park in the United States, the entire national park system, getting about 9 to anywhere between 9 and 11 million visitors per year, more than any other park in the country by at least two times that amount. Yet most never visit the backcountry. And tonight JD's going to talk about some of the trails in the backcountry. He's hiked every one of them, not once, not twice, but nearly three times, earned the 900 miler award, which is given to those who have hiked, as they say, a entire map of the park. Technically, he's hiked nearly double that each time, because it's about 1500 miles to get 900 miles in the park with backtracking. But JD is certainly qualified to give us his opinions on some great trails in the park, some fantastic views, some rarely seen treasures in the Smokies, and also just talk in general about wildlife, weather, other hikers that he's met on the way, and advice on great day trips, great weekend trips, and even week-long trips in the Smokies. So that said, let's welcome JD. All right, this is Bird Shooter here. I've got JD Schlant with me, the founder of Trail Hard, who's going to give us some insight into the Great Smoky Mountain National Park tonight. Welcome to the show, JD.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, well, you know, I had to get you on. We just camped together in the Smokies here a couple weeks ago. And to be frank with you, JD, I don't think there's anybody that I've met that knows more about the Smokies than you do.
I certainly appreciate that. But believe me, there's a lot of people out there that I meet on the trail that are so knowledgeable about the park. It's fascinating to see these people.
Yeah, so do you embrace the whole trail name mentality? Do you have a trail name, or do you just go by JD?
Just JD.
No. Yeah.
No, not the long hiker like yourself, of course.
So I know that you have spent a lot of weeks in the weekends in the Smokies, even just this year. We're only, 4 weeks into 2014. You've already done how many trips in the Smokies this year?
Gosh, probably six or seven. Every weekend I've been up there, and I've backpacked a couple weekends, and yeah, I've been up there every weekend. I absolutely love it. There's just no place like it.
Yeah. And we just had this big snow that came through. How much snow is sitting on the ground up there now in the higher elevations, like Newfound Gap and LeConte and those areas?
Yeah, well, 2 weeks ago we got caught up in the storm up there, and the park was completely closed down, and we were on the North Carolina side. And we had actually hiked up Sweat Heifer, and it's about a 35-foot ascent up to the AT. And we got up to the AT, we hiked on out to Icewater Springs, and I'd say at that point we were in 6 to 8 inches. But after we got to Charles Bunyan, there weren't any footsteps. And so we post-holed, and we hit some two-foot drifts on out to Dry Sluice Gap Trail. I mean, it was pretty heinous going through some of that snow. And
yes,
the temperature was brutal.
So a similar route to what we did with you a couple weeks ago, but then you guys dropped down to Kephart, right?
Exactly, yeah. Pretty much the same route, except for, yeah, we dropped off Dry Sluice and went on out Grassy Branch instead of down Smokemont. So
J.D., to give you some credit here, because one for our listeners, I don't know if many of our listeners have ever heard of the 900 Mile Club, but it's basically, you can go to 900miler.com. It's basically all the trails in the park that you can hike and get a patch and a certificate.
Right.
And I understand that you've done every trail in the park, not once, not twice, but you're about to complete your third map. Is that right?
That's right. I hope to complete it this April. I'll slow down quite a bit in March because of tax season. But I've never heard of the club when I started hiking, you know, and I was just hiking, training to climb Mount Rainier. And I know when I first hiked up, my first trail was up Rainbow Falls, and I thought I was going to die. I literally said, what in the heck am I going to do? And then I tell you, after the first couple of trails, I really fell in love with hiking. And I used to hunt all over the country, used to hunt a lot, big game hunting. I tell you, there's nothing like spending time on the trail, though. As you know, it's just, you just respect the wildlife and the flora and the fauna. It's just amazing the things you see. But anyways, and I'd climb Mount Rainier in July. We summited July 5th, 2008. And then I got back to Clinton and said, well, I'm sorry, keep hiking. And then I ran into a group of guys that were hiking, and they said, hey, you got to start doing, trying to mark the map. And I didn't really know what that meant. So I'd spent 6 months just hiking the hardest trails I could find. And pretty soon I started, reading and talking to people. And there's this 900 club where you mark every single trail in the park. And, you get a map I have a spreadsheet. And so the first time, like I said, I probably started in the middle of 08, and I finished up in September 09, the first map. And the second map, I really wasn't trying to complete the map. I was just hiking, just hiking some of the trails, my favorite trails, and doing a lot of backpacking. And I had a friend I was helping get his map. And so we were concentrating on North Carolina side. And so that took me 3 years. I mean, I didn't finish that map until September 15th, 2012. And now this third map, for some reason, I just blistered it. I'm almost finished, and it's going to be a little over a year and a half. So
you're going to probably finish your third map this year, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'll finish it in April, I hope. April, yeah, definitely.
So I got to give the listeners this, because even though it's 900 miles per map, and you're about ready to complete your third, so 2,700 miles in the park, but you've really got to do about 1,500 miles to get those 900 miles, right? Do you want to explain that?
Pretty much at a minimum. You got to, hike 1,500 miles. Now, some people do it less, but they'll really spend time mapping it out. I never have because I like to hike. Like last map, I had to drive all the way over to Bryson City, hike in 5 miles, and then hike this 0.9 mile just to get that trail because it was an isolated trail. That's the same like with Bone Valley. It's a 1.8-mile trail in the middle of nowhere, but it takes a 10-mile hike to get to it.
Right.
So you're repeating that 10 miles, in and out, so you're hiking 22 miles to get a 1.8-mile trail.
And do you capitalize on, like, the boats that can run you off across the lake at all, or did you pretty much avoid that and just duplicate mileage to get your map hiked out?
The first time I used the boat, some, because I was hiking with the Wednesday Club. It's the Margaret Stevens Hiking Club, and they're fantastic about setting up these boat trips. And then when I was hiking the second map, I was doing more backpacking, so I repeated a bunch. I really did. I probably hiked 2,000 miles just to get the 900 the second time. I average about a little over 700 miles a year in the park hiking. That's just the park, but I hike quite a bit around in other areas too. But
I stand by my statement, JD, and that is that you definitely know the park. Anybody that's hiked every trail almost three times in the park definitely knows the park. So, and just to help our listeners, a couple things. So Fontana Lake was dammed up. I can't even tell you what year. I know it was in the early 1900s. And essentially cut off the Fontana Dam or Fontana area from what is probably the most isolated part. Section of the park, right?
I'd say it's most remote area for sure.
Right, and you can hire a ferry out of Fontana and essentially take a boat across the lake and access some very remote areas. But so the 900 Miler Club, what do you guys have, like around 400 members now? Is that right?
Yeah, I think there's about 400 people that have completed all the trails, and a lot of them have done it multiple times now. You're seeing some. I ran into a guy Saturday. I was like. And I've seen him a number of times. His name is Scott. And it's funny, I met him at one of the shelters one night, actually Peck's Corner, the same place I met this crazy group from Atlanta, self-included. But anyways, and he told me he was on his fifth map. And I saw him the other day, and now he's on his sixth. So but he lives right in Cosby, and it's in his back door. And he's not, I don't think he works that much. So there's some, I think, wow, I hiked 854 miles, but there's some people out there that really hike even more than I do.
and obviously it helps to have the Smokies in your backyard, and you're in Knoxville, right? So you're what?
60-mile drive, so it's...
Right.
You know, that's one of the hurdles, but I tell you, it's worth it when you get up there.
Yeah, so one of the questions I had for you, JD, was just obviously if you were into hunting, you spent a lot of time outside, you love the outdoors, so you got an appreciation for the outdoors early on. But at what point did you make the jump into backpacking? Like, what was the big switch where you just decided to put a back on for fun and walk in the woods versus actually, you know, hunt?
Oh, you know, I had a farm in Middle Tennessee that I always hunted on, and I'd gone out west, and my kids didn't, you know, we just quit eating the game, and I wasn't going to kill something if we weren't going to eat it, and so I kind of lost interest in that aspect. I have no problem with people hunting, but I just can't see a senseless killing, so, and I you know, I just love the outdoors so much, and then once I started hiking, and not, you know, it's just so much more pleasant than just sitting in a tree, and of course, and you're seeing so much more, and gosh, there's nothing like sitting around a campfire at night on a mountain stream. Of course, you do that when you're hunting too, and that's one of the great things about hunting. But you know, just seeing and appreciating the wildlife and their freedom out there is kind of, it's just kind of breathtaking, and it just, you know, it's just hard to explain how, but it's a natural transition. You know, people, I think, you know, want to change, and that's, it's just been a fantastic change, and I just, more of appreciation, I think, actually, for the environment, too.
Yeah, so did you do your first backpacking trip in the Smokies, or did you do it somewhere else when you...
Not counting college, yeah, the Smokies would have been the first. Actually, Mount Rainier was the first, then I came back and hiked, and I ran into a friend that, I ran into a guy hiking, and he said, hey, we ought to start backpacking, and the first hike we did was Lakeshore. It was a two-night backpack, 37 miles, I believe, and... man, that just got me hooked. We did it in April, and the wildflowers were coming out. And then the dogwoods were blooming on Lakeshore, and I tell you, it was one of the prettiest sights I've ever seen.
I love the South in the spring. Yep. There's it's so pretty. There's just so many really, really amazing flowers that pop out in the spring, you know?
Steve, I tell you, I hiked for 2 years, or a year and a half, and never once looked at a wildflower. I always had my head down and just pushed it. I mean, I really pushed it. I went from 200 pounds. When I first started hiking, I weighed 200, and then I got down to 160 when I climbed Mount Rainier, which was started in January of 2008 and climbed in July. I was at 160, so I've lost actually about 35 pounds, 165. But anyways, so I just had my head down and was pushing every trail I could push, and I backpacked with these two ladies and another guy one time. We stayed over in Walnut Bottoms, and went up Gunter Fork and came down Swallow Fork Trail. And, you know, Gunter Fork's a heinous trail. It's just really had some troubles. It's been washed out a couple of times. But we kept stopping and looking at the flowers, and these ladies kept showing me these flowers. We saw squirrel corn, Dutchman's Breeches, stone crop. It was amazing. I had never stopped and looked at the flowers. And after that hike, I went and bought a couple flower books and studied, and now they call me the flower guy. I lead spring flower hikes, wildflower hikes every year. One of them's into the Sinks, which is just a fabulous off trail. It's not on the map, but it's one of the most prolific places for wildflowers. I have appreciation for wildflowers now.
Yeah, and the Smokies have like an amazing diversity and all kind of plant life, right? So you probably get more in that area than you would in a lot of parts of the United States, or at least the South, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, it'll open your eyes if you come up here in April. You will be amazed. It's one of the most diverse biosphere in the United States. You know, a friend of mine, we hiked one day into the Sinks and then went out Scott Mountain, and we counted. After we got through, we named 75 wildflowers we counted just in that day, and that included yellow lady slippers, pink lady slippers, some really rare flowers. And I've seen a couple rare flowers up there where I've actually called the park system and told them where they were at. If you read one of the books, it said, if you happen to see this spreading begonia, which I saw it on a trail and identified it, and it said to call the park. And so I called Twin Creeks, which is the research center there, and man, they're all excited about it. So there's just so much to see in the park. If anybody gets a chance, I tell you, April is just an incredible time to take a slow hike.
Yeah, and the leaves aren't on the trees yet, so you have amazing views pretty much wherever you are.
Yeah, it's, yeah, and everything's coming alive. So the birds are out. The you'll see a lot more wildlife. I mean, it's a really nice time, a new birth, if you will, of the park.
Right. Hey, so another thing I wanted to ask you, because having been on this last trip where we were hiking together, you obviously know some very unique kind of hidden treasures in the park that most people walk right by, have no idea are even there. One of great examples, I think 2 years ago, you hooked Porter up with a plane crash that I think is very little known just off the AT. I think it was near Cosby Knob, yes, but you can correct me on that. And then the Charlie's Bunyan trip that we did this year, you showed us an amazing view that's not at Charlie's Bunyan, but near there. What are your kind of top three sort of secret treasures of the park, if you're willing to share them and not have them overrun by the masses?
Oh, that's funny. The absolute one of the best views in the park, and it's the one of the hardest to get to, is called High Rocks. And it's you have to go out Welch's Ridge all the way off the AT, and it's a long ways out. And right till you get before you get to Cold Springs Gap, there's this little manway. It's a 0.9 mile that goes up to an old lookout tower. The tower's gone now, but it sits on these high rocks, and you can see all the way to Fontana. You can see Shuckstack. It is absolutely the most stunning view, looking back towards Pisgah. And that's one of my favorite places to go, especially if you can get there at lunchtime. And it's a hard place to get to. It's really isolated. Another trail I love, and I don't know if you did this trail with Derek or not, but it's off of the Chimney Tops, where you take that manway. It takes you up to Sugar Land. That's really a neat trail.
Wait, that's off trail though, right? Like it's not official, is it?
No, it's not official. I think it's on the old 1972 map I have, but it's dotted, so it wasn't really official. I think at one time it may have been an official trail, but.
Number three, is the plane crash even in the top three?
It was at first, but I've seen there's another plane crash that comes out off the Dragon that I'm anxious to get up to. I know how to get there. I've got the map coordinates, but I haven't been there yet. That's one I really want to get to.
What's the story? Are these military planes that crashed, or they're private?
Plane that crashed. I think they were doing maneuvers, but the one that's over there on Cosby's, yeah, I think it's an F. Gosh, I can't remember now, but. I've done some research on it. It's, I can't remember, Steve.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's cool because a lot of people would probably walk right by that, have no clue it's there at all, right?
Oh, yeah, you see it all the time. There's a steam engine coming down Forney Creek, the Forney Creek or Forney Ridge, Forney Creek Trail. Everybody just walks right by. If you don't know it's there, you're not going to see it. So you have to go with somebody that's been in the old steam engine. That's pretty neat to see. But it's not far off trail either.
What about some of these graveyards? Because, I mean, there's graveyards all over the place that, from when the little mountain communities used to be in the area. Is there any that are super cool that are, not very well known?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple that I really like to go to. We went to one 2 weeks ago when the park was closed. It's right there near Sugarlands, but you go out Old Sugarland Trail and you go out to this place that's called the Old Stone House. It's not on the map or anything, and nobody really knows the history of the Old Stone House. It's really a fascinating. It's an all-stone house. Of course, the roof is all gone, but the structure is still there. It's built out of solid stone, which was unique because the architect in the park at that time was just stone foundations and everything else was wood. This particular house was all stone, and and I've read different accounts, and nobody's actually sure how who owned the house or why it was built or when it was built. But right before you get there, there's a big old cemetery that's really neat to see. But one of my favorite cemeteries is called the Dodgen Rayfield Cemetery. A buddy of mine's named Ed Dodgen. Him and I looked for this particular cemetery on four different trips. We had an old map and some dialogue out of the old Brown Book that said cross the stream, cross the creek five times. There's a fence on your right. Right at the fence, take a left, and it's right there. We looked and looked and looked, and finally one day we were up there, and I happened to see an old saw mark on a tree where a tree had been cut. And we got on this old logging road, went up this logging road and dropped over this big ridge and went down this beautiful bottom. I mean, it's one of the prettiest bottoms I've seen. It's out there in Greenbrier area. And I said, Ed, it's got to be down here. We looked and couldn't find it. So on the way up, we went back over the ridge, which is a pretty good climb. And then we got to this ridge line. And there was a tiny trail that went up this ridge line. And so I followed this tiny trail up, and sure enough, it opened up into this really beautiful setting. And it was a cemetery there. It was unmaintained at the time. And I said, now who in the world would go all the way to the top to bury somebody? I mean, they had a heck of a climb. And come to find out, that's where most of the cemeteries are in the park, is up on top of the mountains.
Huh. Yeah, and the Park Service still actually leads trips to some of these cemeteries for the locals who were cut off when the lake got flooded, right?
Yeah, down in, on the North Carolina side, they do. They've actually they gravel the road. They keep, you know, but they have a bus that takes people to the old cemeteries. That's fun to go see those cemeteries.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's cool. So, you know, I think that, as I understand it, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, the most visited national park in the entire country. You know, obviously it's a magnet for a lot of first timers that, you know, are just kind of getting their feet wet with hiking and backpacking. What are some of the, you know, biggest mistakes you see people make, whether they're hiking or backpacking? Cause you're obviously on the trails all the time. You know, just in your time out there.
That's interesting. I have a great story. I'll try and make it short, but, there's this, park ranger Heath, he's picked me up a number of times and shuttled me during storms and stuff when I'm hiking. But this one Wednesday, we was up there. We had a bus hike. A bus was picking us up in North Carolina to bring us back around. We were going out the AT and down Welch's Ridge on this particular hike. And I got up there. We got up there early in the morning. There was three of us. And I saw Heath, and I said, went over and talked to him. He said, hey, look, we've got three lost hikers or five lost hikers in the park right now. And they've been out all night. They don't have any food and, you know, ill-prepared cotton clothing. And this was early May, so, you know, it's cool. Cool in the mornings, of course. You've been up on Clingman's Dome. And you know how cold it can get.
Yeah.
And so the park, they were worried about them. They had told their grandmother to come down and pick them up at Newfound Gap, that they were going up to Clingman's Dome and hike down to Newfound Gap on the Appalachian Trail. And he said he had... And we had several people up there hiking, coming down different ways, and he talked to everybody, and he said, hey, J.D., you're going to have the best chance to see them because you're going to be on the AT, and we think they went the wrong way. We don't have any reason, because we've searched all the way down to Mount Collins Shelter and all the way through. You know, so they've already walked that trail to Newfound Gap. Anyway, so we started walking on the AT, and right when we got to Goshen Prong cutoff, right before that, here comes a guy and a girl, and I tell you what, they look so, they are just haggard. And we stopped and talked to them, and sure enough, they're part of the lost party. Said they ended up at some shelter, spent the night, left their kids and grandfather at the shelter. They were trying to go back and backtrack. They said a ranger had told them to go this direction to get to Newfound Gap, which was totally wrong. But anyways, we gave them food and water, and I was able to call 911, and then the 911 called me back from the park and said, hey, is this the group we're looking for? We're going to send rangers out now. If you're with them, tell them to wait right where they're at. We got, you know, people on coming out to get them. Anyways, we lost reception with them. When I got back down, I called the park, and they said, yeah, we got them out. Thank goodness that, you know, you guys gave them water and food, so they were pretty well dehydrated. And anyways, they were from Florida. And the guy looks at me, and he said, I ain't never come back here to hike.
yeah, right.
Anyways, and then another time we were going down Forney Ridge and found another guy. They were backpacking. And we were coming up Forney Creek Trail and passed this guy, and I said hello to him. And he just didn't even look at me. You know, he just grunted, kept on walking. We walked up and got past the last campsite on Forney Creek, and from there the trail just goes really steep. And so we stopped and waited a while, and then we hiked up about a mile up this trail, and I hear somebody screaming in the woods. And I walk up to him, there's this guy sitting there in blue jeans and a white T-shirt with this big backpack and a Kmart tent, a frying pan. And I think he's leaving the frying pan. He said, man, I've lost my brother-in-law. This guy's name was Jeremy. I'll never forget it. He's crying. He's in tears. He said, I've been screaming and hollering. He said, I stepped off the trail to go to the bathroom. I turned around. My brother-in-law was gone. Come to find out, his brother-in-law had a mental disability. And his brother-in-law had actually taken off the other way. And was hiking in the opposite direction, and you know how fast you get apart. Anyways, the two guys I was with helped him carry his stuff up. I ran up from that point all the way back up to Clingman's Dome and ran into a trail crew, and we called the Park Service, and we waited there for, 2 hours, and then my group finally came out with Jeremy. And they ended up finding the guy. He had gone down to campsite, I think it was, 68, laying in the trail, and the park rangers found him that night, and they walked on out to the bottom, and Jeremy actually drove around and met him at the Oconal Lefty Visitor Center. But I tell you what, you're talking about ill-prepared. Cotton clothes, canned goods, you know, thinking they're cooking over the open fire. And he said, man, I got down to that first campsite, and I realized I made a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, the Smokies can be very unforgiving. I mean, a lot of people think you're in North Carolina, that it's the South, that, you know, the weather's not that severe. But, I mean, you know, you and I both know, because we've been there in the winter, how majorly bad things can turn very, very quickly. I guess you saw and read the stories about those three guys. I think they were from Gaffney, South Carolina, that had a major mishap just here in January, had to be helicoptered out, right?
Exactly. That's the things you see, you know. I wish there was a website people – well, there probably is. If they just need more prepared when they come out there for a backpacking trip. The weather can turn instantly. And I don't care if it's – never go in the park without a rain jacket in your backpack, a means of lighting a fire. It's just – it's too vast, and the weather changes too quickly.
Yeah, so on that topic, J.D., I got to ask you, because you and I have both been in the Smokies during some bad, bad weather. You know, what's the worst weather you've ever experienced there, and maybe your most nerve-wracking couple days in the Smokies, whether it's weather-related or otherwise?
January 09, we were hiking over in Cataloochee. Started out on a pretty day. I drove, and there was four of us, and we drove in on 284, which is a gravel road. No problems getting in. We were doing we hiked Caldwell Fork on up to Cataloochee Divide, then out and down to Hemphill Bald. We got to Hemphill Bald and it started snowing. I mean, it snowed and snowed and snowed. And I got nervous at that point because I knew that we were stuck in the back of that. And that's a very remote area of Cataloochee. We got to our trucks and the park was completely empty. There was nobody around, and the snow was probably, at that point, 6 inches on the road. So I knew that I couldn't go out the main road that's paved, because it's such a windy, steep, narrow road. So we stayed on the gravel, got out on 284, and the gate was locked. We sat at the gate, which was probably about 5 miles from the interstate at that point, and we walked down the road, got reception, called the park service, and they sent a ranger out to unlock the gate for us. So we waited there over an hour and a half in our car. The temperatures were in the teens at this point. And he came and unlocked the door. So I'm driving down, finished out 284 on the gravel okay. But as soon as it went to asphalt, I put my truck in the ditch, and here it was. The temperature's dropping, snowing like crazy. Anyways, we got out that night. I tell you, I was never so thankful to get out of the park. Park ranger helped us get the truck out.
You know, it's funny you say that, because when I was with with the boys that you've met, we had a Cataloochee experience where, to the ranger's credit, he had already flipped the gate, because they will shut that gate once it starts snowing, right?
Right.
But his house was down in the valley. He saw us coming out. He literally followed us out and met us at the gate. We didn't wait but like 10 seconds.
Oh, that's great.
Kudos to the ranger. Most of us had four-wheel drive. But, yeah, I think
– road getting out of there, though. I don't care if you got four-wheel drive. I tell you what, that road is treacherous.
Yeah, no kidding. That's the truth. So do you have a favorite, like, hike in the park, a favorite route? Like, you know, maybe just a favorite day hike, a favorite 2-3-day hike, and maybe if you were going to do a 5 or 7 day hike, where would you go?
You know, it really just depends on the season. If you ask me for a year-round hike, if somebody was coming to the park, hands down, Allen Cave Trail is the prettiest trail in the park. The water is beautiful, the cave, the overlooks, the climb, the bluff, I mean, it's got everything. It's got everything you can imagine in a trail. It's the beauty is stunning, but it is crowded. And that's the only thing I don't like about it. I won't, you know, it's just hard to hike on a Saturday. You know, I prefer not to hike that. But in the wintertime, or, you know, if you can hit it during the week, it's absolutely, without doubt, the prettiest trail in the park. And it's probably the most popular.
I've been on that trail in the winter, though. Sometimes you get just like ice that is
treacherous winter.
Unrelenting.
It is. It is a pretty treacherous trail in the winter. It's fun, though, if you got the right gear. Again, I wouldn't tackle it unless I had some type of foot traction. We've hiked it twice this winter, and both times we've had to use foot traction, micro spikes or yak
crampons.
And my absolute favorite November backpacking trip is Old Settlers Trail. If you want a taste of the history of the park, hike Old Settlers Trail. We usually do a 2-day hike. We'll start at Greenbrier or a Graveyard Trail. It's off Roaring Fork Road. We'll start there. Or actually, start at Rainbow Falls. We do Bassin Creek, go down and look at the falls. There's a couple cemeteries. We'll hike Graveyard Trail, stay at 32 the first night. We'll hike over into Greenbrier, and we'll visit a couple cemeteries on the way. And then we'll hit Old Settlers. And once you're on Old Settlers, you're on a historic walk in the park. There's chimneys, stone walls that will rival any stone wall you can see driving through Nashville. I mean, it is amazing. These walls are plumb, 2 foot thick. They just go for miles. I mean, one wall I know goes for a half mile. Just unbelievable.
Now, they were used for cattle, I would take it, right? Cattle are...
They cleared the fields out to, to grow their corn. A lot of moonshine made back in the day. Corn was important. And they would clear those fields out. You'd see the house. Of course, the house is always on a creek. And they had mills everywhere. There's a couple old, wooden structure still standing, but lots of chimneys, lots of walls.
You might find some moonshine still back there to this day.
You may do it. I'd find some in my backpack. The reason I do that in November, because it's in that lower area and the fields are clear, so it's old farmland. In the summertime, it just grows up and it gets really hot. You know, you're at a low elevation. But the trail undulates so much on Old Settlers, it's still about a 3,500-foot ascent if you hike the whole trail. And it's I think it's 15-miler, maybe a 16-miler. But it's fun to break up in a backpacking trip. In November, just beautiful. You got some good views, but just seeing the old farm places. And the snakes aren't so bad. In the summertime, it's pretty snaky walking around those walls. If you're going to... Everybody comes to everybody comes to the park wants to hike the Appalachian Trail, of course. One of the hikes that we did this year, I lead hikes for this Great Smoky Mountain Adventure Group, and one of the hikes I led, I think it was in August, we started at Newfound Gap and hiked all the way down to 20-mile ranger station in a day. It was 35 and a half miles. Took us 15 hours and 36 minutes. I was kind of hoping we'd take 15 hours, but... We got started late and it was raining, and I tell you what, it was so humid that day. By the time we got to Rocky Top, I drank a gallon of water. But once we got past Rocky Top, it's up and down through that section there, Rocky Top, Derek Nye. I mean, you're just constantly up and down.
So on that topic, JD, you obviously lead a lot of hikes, and you've been with a couple clubs. You want to talk about a couple of the clubs that you've been involved with, and how listeners can get some information. So if they want to hook up with the clubs and do some hiking in the Smokies, they can be active.
Sure, the Smoky Mountain Hiking Club is the oldest club in the park, and they have a trail. They have a hike every weekend. You can look at their website. I think it's Smoky Mountain. hikingclub.org. You can Google that. And anybody's welcome to join their hikes. And they have their hikes are generally moderate, not many difficult hikes. Sometimes they'll have a neat off trail hike too that I like to do. And I lead hikes for them. I lead at least a couple a year for them. And I've been in that group since 2008. But I've met a lot of great members that I still hike with, continually. Another group I hike with is Great Smoky Hiking and Adventure Group, and it's a meetup organization. But we have hikes. There's usually two or three hikes every weekend, and I've probably led 40, events for them, 40 hikes. It's neat because I can always post a hard hike and get people to sign up. There's a few really hardcore hikers that'll, because I've got to, you know, I'm fond of the 18 to 20 mile hikes because I drive, you know, an hour one way or hour and a half. It's kind of nice to get in a good hike while you're there. Yeah. There's a lot of easy hikes too that are posted. We've got a few people that post 7 and 8 mile hikes, but those two groups are excellent. If you just want to come and find a hike, I'd start there. And the meetup group, though, you have to join. Or if you send me an email, you can probably, you know, you can come as a guest. But the Great Smoky Mountain Hiking Club, you can just show up for a hike. Pretty easy.
I'll tell you what I'll do, JD. I'll put a link on the podcast here to your Trailhard site, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And if anybody wants to join up, they can reach out to you. But, hey, you teed me up perfectly for a question. What is the hardest trail in the park? Because you kind of alluded to that before.
That's a great question. There's a trail called Jenkins Ridge that I aptly named Stinkin' Jenkins. It's a wonderful hike. But I tell you, it's one of the toughest hikes I've ever done. I've hiked it five times, four times with a backpack and going up it, and one time actually, I came down it once and up it once without a backpack and up it three times with a backpack. It's brutal. It starts in North Carolina and comes all the way over to Tennessee, hits the Appalachian Trail, and you have to come down Lead Cove to get out. Bolt Mountain, Lead Cove. And you get there by boat. It's a tough hike. Jenkins Ridge is up there, top three, and another heinous trip is Baxter, and I hiked Baxter with the Atlanta group with a couple of your friends about two years ago, I guess. That's a tough climb too. That's a 4,000 foot total ascent over 6 miles, I believe. It's really a tough pull, but it's fun. Yep. It's fun. Those two right there, I think, are the, just because of the distance and the elevation gain, those are the toughest.
Yeah, what we really haven't talked about, and if you haven't hiked the Smokies, you probably don't appreciate, is when you start in the valley and you hike up to the ridge where the AT is, I mean, you've got some serious mileage. You're probably starting from anywhere between, 1,900 feet in the valley going up to, I mean, you can go up to 6,600 feet or more, right?
Yeah, if you come up Goshen, you're going to come up to 66 or 6,000. If you come up Baxter, you're going up to 6. You know, you can just do Rainbow Falls right out of Gatlinburg and go up to 6,000 feet to Mount LeConte. That's another hard one, and that's the one I used to train on the most, with Rainbow. It's easiest to get to. Wonderful trail. You know, you've got some nice water features there, and you got some great views. You got some really, you know, some steep inclines. It's a fun trail if you like something tough. Rainbow Falls, easy to get to, right out of Gatlinburg. Wonderful trail.
And I think people, and JD, I'm sure you'll agree, can completely underestimate the humidity and the heat of the summer, and how that'll just suck the life out of you, especially when you're going uphill, right?
Oh, gosh, it's brutal. You can tell a huge difference when the temperature's in October. You climb, man, this, I didn't think this trail was that easy this summer. The humidity is just incredible. You'll have 90% humidity and, you know, 90 degrees. You got a really tough climb.
And not to give the best-kept secret of the Smokies away, but is your favorite season the winter?
Actually, Steve, I tell you, you know, every season I'm thinking, God, this has got to be the best time to hike. The October, obviously, because, you know, the colors and the fresh air, the crisp, and, you know, it seems like you can see forever up there. Mm-hmm. Just the changing. It's kind of sad because you're losing, and then you're into the winter, and the winter's fun because of the snow and the views and the challenge it presents. That's always a fun, you know, to get out there and hike in the snow. And to hear your feet crunching the snow, that's just so peaceful. And to see watch people behind you and their breath as, the fog and the steam or the vapor, really, it's just fascinating. But, and then you get to spring, and all of a sudden you got the wildfires, and then you got another, oh gosh, can it get any better than this? And then, like in the summertime, when you're camped on campsite number 56 and you're body surfing down Deep Creek and ice cold temperatures, and you know, it's hard to say the best season, you know.
Well, I think there's a reason that you've hiked like nearly 2,700 miles in the park, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I just looked 854 last year alone, just in the park. Wow.
So all these miles you've logged, JD, and I know we met you in a shelter on the, I guess on the Appalachian Trail. I'm not sure exactly which one to go back, but was it Peck's? Peck's Corner?
Peck's Corner, yeah.
What I got to ask you, I'm sure you've met a lot of interesting people on the trail. Can you just give us some interesting characters you've met over the years?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, Matt has to be one of the most interesting characters I've met.
Someone I know.
Yeah, you know Matt, I think. Although the whole group from Atlanta that you've hiked with quite a bit, Matt, Derek, David, and Joe, just a great group of people, yourself. It's so fun to meet people that are so knowledgeable about hiking, you know, and I love to hear the stories about the AT that you guys can sit there and talk about, you know, the long distance hikes. And of course we have another connection because we've all like have gone out west and done some other adventures. But you know, I seem like I meet somebody every time I'm hiking that's got a great story to tell. That they're training for Denali or they're training for Mount Rainier. You know, so many people I see now are training for Mount Rainier. But I've met a number of characters that I've come good friends with. Another guy, Ed, that I used to hike with all the time. I met him on the trail. It's a wonderful place. And it's a great community because you have so much in common when you see these people backpacking. Oh, yeah, I've hiked the PCT or, yeah, I've been out the John Muir Trail. It's a wonderful place to meet people.
Yeah. I agree. Is there a favorite shelter? I mean, shelters seem to be the kind of classic meeting place, right? Because some of the campsites in the park are pretty remote. You wouldn't necessarily meet people there. But do you have a favorite shelter? I mean, I know Icewater Springs traditionally is probably the most social shelter in the park just because it's close to Newfound Gap and easily accessible. But do you have a favorite shelter?
I do. It's a Laurel Gap shelter.
Okay.
It's not heavily used, obviously, because it's not on the AT. It's difficult to get to. It's the last one they rebuilt in the park. A good friend of mine, Howard, he actually worked on it the whole time. He kept telling me, you got to go out and see it. I don't know if you saw it before when it had the chain link fence and it was always had water in it. It seemed like a dismal place. But now it's wonderful. They've rechanneled the water. The Smoky Mountain Hiking Club did most of this work. And I tell you, it's a great shelter. It's got sky, you know, it's got the skylights. It's got the nice cooking area out front and the side table, a separate grill outside. It's a wonderful setting. It's in a grass field.
Hey, so let's talk about that because you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of my hiking early on was with the chain link closed shelters. They've all been completely renovated for those who haven't been there for a while. The Smoky Mountain Hiking Club not only has done a lot of this work, but they've funded it, right? I mean, the money is not coming from the government, as I understand.
Right. They do all the funding, fundraisers. They do all the work, volunteers. It's amazing what they do. You know, in the early years, they fought the shelters on the trail. You go to their website, read some of their earlier history. Their whole mantra was the less impact in the park. You know, they wanted preserved as a wilderness area. These shelters, though, that they have done a fantastic job, and they've made them, you know, they're putting all the privies in now, handicap accessible. So, I mean, they're always doing work on the Appalachian Trail.
I agree. I don't think they get the credit they deserve because, to ask you a question bluntly, would those shelters exist without those volunteers?
No, sir. No. Not without the volunteers, they would not. They would be run down. They would look like the old chain link, you know, until they fell down. And then at that point, I doubt if the park would you know, I don't know what, maybe, no. And now every one of the shelters have been rebuilt. So now it's just a matter of maintaining. And they're always carrying out trash, too. They do a wonderful job. You can believe some of the trash that people leave.
Oh, God, I can believe. I can totally believe. It's the most visited park in the country, I believe, even in the backcountry. Maybe we should, let's plug the club again. What's the website? Because, God, they probably need as many people as they can on volunteering.
Yeah. Oh, they do. The Smoky Mountain Hiking Club. SmokyMountainHikingClub.org is their, and I think it's just smhc.org is the website.
I'll get them a link. I'll put a link on the podcast. They sure could. I mean, I actually will say right now that I will come out and meet the club and give them some help because
I'll send you emails. I get an email every week wanting help on the AT.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
They have a newsletter that goes out, the ATC for Appalachian Trail and Conservancy Group. And they'll, you know, wanting help, or especially in the summertime, you know, when they have a lot of crews up there. And they get help from the the ATC, they get help. They get a crew from them too to work on the trails.
Yeah, right. That's true. There's probably some ATC funding that comes in there.
Yeah, they actually have a crew that, and they'll recruit from us, and spend a week working on a trail, which I want to do, and I really need to do that. I need to give back to the park, and I try to. I've helped maintain a little bit on the trails, but not as much as I need to.
Yeah, not to take away from the Park Service, you know, it's not like they're getting a lot of funding these days, so no. I think that they do the best with what they got.
They could do a lot more if they didn't have to, of course, worry about 441 and the, just the enforced law enforcement. It seems like most, there's so much involved in law enforcement nowadays that they don't have time for the backcountry rangers, and I can understand that. I mean,
let's talk about that, because one thing that most people probably don't realize about the Smokies is that 441, when that deal was made to essentially create the park, the law was that basically they could not charge admission to 441. In other words, like you go to the Grand Canyon, you go to Yellowstone, you pay 10 or 20 bucks to get in the door or to get in the gate. So they get money from that feeds the park.
Exactly.
But with the Smokies, they cannot do that. They cannot charge for you to go to across 441 from North Carolina to Tennessee or the other way, so they don't get any of that revenue. Would you agree that impacts the park significantly?
Oh, without a doubt. That's, you know, you got one of the most visited parks in the nation, and there's no entrance fee. I would love to see them charge, you know, a yearly pass, or if they could somehow control who uses Cades Cove, you know, set up a bus system where they charge a fee and get all those cars out of there. You can't even, gosh, I would stay away from that Cades Cove loop in the summer. It's just a gridlock.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, you know, funding, no, you know, that's definitely a lost revenue for the park.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the big challenges they have, which actually, again, leads me to another question for you. What do you think, JD, are some of the big issues, the challenges that the park faces, not just today, but, you know, in the next 10, 20 years?
Gosh, you know, I think adjacent development of land is a huge problem. There's nothing worse than hiking on a trail up against the park boundary, and you'll see a house where they've cleared every single tree up to the property line. I mean, it kind of breaks your heart. You're thinking, you know, I can understand, I guess the people that live in the house feel like they want a view, but I think adjacent development of the park is a problem. And the invasive insects have just wreaked havoc on the spruce and the, what was it, the balsam woolly adelgid they had. Now they got the hemlock.
Right. Yeah.
Woolly adelgid. The hemlocks are just, you know, they're devastated now. It's sad. And there's always an issue with air quality.
Yeah, right.
And I guess that's being in the southeast, you know, all this, the park is not, I guess all the smog just drifts into the park, but, you know, I know it's, the water quality is affected by it, and obviously the trees as well.
Yeah, I'm sure Atlanta doesn't have anything to do with that.
Well, or Knoxville, you know, TPA Palace, thing, you know, I don't know what the answer is there.
Hey, so let me ask you another question just about, you know, growth, right? So now Cherokee, the Harris Casino is a full Vegas-style casino recently, and I would imagine that there's going to be more casinos that move in there over the future. Is that good for the area? Is that bad for the area? Will you have any thoughts on that?
I guess it depends on whose pocket, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, none at all. I mean, I feel like the Native American was probably one of the, you know, has been, they deserve whatever they get as far as, you know, reimbursement money-wise. I mean, it was, it was their land. Right. It was their land, and if they didn't discover gold in Dahlonega, which is in Georgia, the Cherokees would still be there. You know, once gold was discovered, the Trail of Tears, you know, that's when they moved everybody to Oklahoma. So, I'm so proud that they're making money, and they're, you know, I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know. No opinion.
Well, so I will tell you this, and J.D., I actually am going to invite you, and I'll give you a side email on this, but we're coming up later in the month to do an overnight in the Smokies, probably going to go to Newton Bald. And one of the reasons that my buddy is really excited is he wants to go out, spend a couple days in the woods, and then go to the Harris Casino in Cherokee. So does that actually – I mean, it could actually help the park, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, he'll spend money in the with the camp fee.
Right.
What do you say? Campsite 52? Is that 52 up there?
I think you're right. That's an amazing. That's only something that a man has hiked the park three times can pull out.
It's crazy. You know, somebody will say, I thought, yeah, it's a 48. And I say, gosh. Anyways, yeah.
Which I understand, and I should ask you, just for verification, it's not a bald anymore, correct?
No, but it's a nice little grassy place. You know, if you go to the right, above the campsite, there's a nice little site up on that kind of a, I guess at one time it was a bald, but you can get a lot of wind through that gap, too.
Hey, so on that topic, tell me some of your favorite views in the park, because I know there's some outstanding ones.
Oh, the views are phenomenal. I mentioned earlier, High Rocks, outstanding view. The Pinnacle, which is an off trail, you go out to Ramsey Cascades, and it's an old lookout tower. And on the way to Ramsey Cascades, there's an old man way that cuts to the left. You can take it up about 2 miles, and it takes you to an incredible view. You can look back towards the jump off, and you see LeConte, the three-piece LeConte. It is wonderful, and it's not traveled much. It's not on the map or anything. Of course, Charlie's Bunyan 1 and 2 that we saw a couple weeks ago, both the outstanding views. Jump off, it's a pretty view, but I prefer the views looking back towards North Carolina, like High Rocks, and some of the views from Appalachian Trail are actually outstanding.
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that, because I think we need to tell the audience here that the highest point on the entire Appalachian Trail is where, JD? Quiz for you.
Quiz? That might be Claim the Zone. 66, what is it, 66, 149 or something like that?
Like I knew you wouldn't get that one right.
Yeah. You know, another excellent one I forgot to mention is Rocky Top. And that's a fun hike. It's you head up Boat Mountain or Lead Cove and hit Boat Mountain and hit the Appalachian Trail and up to Rocky Top. It's an outstanding view looking both directions. You can see all of Fontana. You can almost see Shuckstack. On a clear day, you can see Shuckstack. Wonderful, wonderful trail. Right above Spence Field.
Oh, I love Spence Field. I think that's just a beautiful area.
Oh, it's wonderful. But Rocky Top, right, there's a great view. So it's a hard, you know, it's a really hard hike. But.
Yeah, right. So, J.D., on this last trip, I saw elk for the first time in the park. We were coming out of the Oconaluftee area. I saw probably 7 or 8 elk to the left, and to the right, I saw probably 7 or 8 wild turkey within like a minute of each other. It was amazing. I'm sure with 3 maps of the park that you've seen some stunning wildlife. Tell us your favorite.
Oh gosh, I tell you, I have seen so many elk, and of course the turkeys. You know, every morning we see turkeys. Every time I go into the park, I see turkeys. Except I had a friend come in from Arizona that he wanted to do the high point about a month ago, right before Christmas. We didn't see one turkey. But it was 0 degrees that day. Anyway, I think back in, I want to say it was in October, Is it October? Let's see. Okay, you know, it was in September. September 15th, I believe it was. In middle of September, we took a. I led this hike. I call it the bike hike. As you know, after the sequester, they closed down Boston Mountain Road, Boston Mountain Campground. So I decided, let's do a bike hike. There's a trail back there called Spruce Mountain. It's on Boston Mountain Road. It's a one-mile trail. And there's also Flat Creek that's on the paved part of Hinatuba. So my idea was to, everybody said, take a bike up and go stop at Black Jack Camp where the gate is on the paved road. It's just off the Blue Ridge Parkway. So we go out there, we park our bikes, or we park our trucks, and we ride our bikes from the closed gate on this paved road up to Flat Creek. We push our bikes on Flat Creek. You can't ride your bikes in the park on the trail, but we pushed them all the way out, came back out on the Boston Mountain, and then rode the gravel road for 11 miles to Spruce Mountain, hiked in and out for 1 mile of that trail. Remember, we're marking maps, and this is the only way to get to it. So we get back on the road, and we ride, and it's all downhill to the truck, 11 miles. And I'll tell you what, we are absolutely having a ball. I mean, we've got two lanes to work with, so we're just flying. It's kind of a race. There was 11 of us on the first one. Anyways, we get back to Black Jack Camp, and it's a grassy little park-like. It must not be in the park because they've got a commercial building there, a monument. And it's just full of elk. And they don't even move. They just sit there and look. They're not in rut yet, so they're just laying in this grass eating. The cows are kind of herded up. I bet we saw six elk, and we could almost touch them. So the next week, we go back and do a similar hike, except we ride our bikes up to Poles Gap, and we hike down Hemfield Ball, and then come up Rough Fork and out. I don't know if you've been up there, but Poles Gap trail is closed now.
Yeah. We hiked through there in a crazy snowstorm a few years back.
Snowstorm, you end up staying there at the campground that was closed.
Yeah.
Boston Mountain Campground. Well, that's all closed, and we rode our bikes all the way down that hill. Going up was a challenge, but coming down, we absolutely fly. Anyways, we get back to that grassy place, and the bulls are everywhere. They're on the road. They're on the trail. I mean, at one point, there's an elk running right beside us on the road. That kind of scary, you know. You never know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Driving out the road, you wish you could see the pictures. There's a 6x6 standing in the road. I mean, we've got our windows down, and we're sitting there looking right at him. He's got six or seven cows with him. He's pushing them across the road, right, and we're stopped. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, so the elk were reintroduced, what? I mean, it's been 10 years at least, probably, right?
Yeah. They were reintroduced in the Cataloochee area, but they've actually come out and over into where you saw them at the Oconaluftee. Man, there's nice elk in there.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're obviously very healthy because they wouldn't be in the, you know, the lowlands if they weren't, right? They'd be hiding.
If you're going to see a bear, though, you're going to see a bear if you're driving around Cades Cove. There's a likely chance you'll see a bear, only because people, unfortunately, are feeding them, throwing them food. So they'll hang around. You know, it's unfortunate. I hate to see them in these crowded areas. Laurel Falls Trail, I've seen a bunch there. But if you're in the backcountry hiking and you see a bear, he is going to take off immediately. He is not going to sit there and look for a handout. And that's what you want. I've walked up on bears, you know, four or five times, and they've done exactly what I want them. They've ran. We hiked. We did this backpacking trip where we came off Clemens Dome down into Deep Creek, and we're coming up Martin's Gap Trail, which is a really heinous 2 miles straight up trail. And I actually went to Newton Ball, and there was this black bear out in the middle of the trail. I was up leading, and one of the guys with me had never seen a bear in the park. Been hiking for 2 years. And he was so excited to see this bear, but it stood out in the middle of the trail and looked at us. And before we could all get our cameras up and take a picture, he was gone. And that's exactly what the bear should do. And, you know, you've been in shelters. I read, you know, your website, that incident where they tore the tent up. That's a case where a bear's too familiar with people.
Yeah, they're having bad problems there. They had to go to bear canisters. But, I mean, for the most part in the Smokies, and I mean, they took the chain link fence down for a reason. They obviously have it under control, and I guess the cable system they have to hang food seems to be working.
Right.
Because, you know, to be honest with you, I have never seen a bear in the Smokies, which, I mean, I guess we hike in the winter a lot, so they're probably not out as much. But
they're not. They are out, though. We saw some tracks 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
No, my understanding from the chain link fence, and I've seen pictures where people were feeding the bears through the chain link, and so naturally the bears would come to the shelters. And so I'm talking to Howard, this friend of mine, said, you know, we figured the chain links was the wrong thing to do because that just gave people protection so they would feed them through the fence. Now you're not going to be feeding the bear in the shelter. That's the last thing you're going to do because, you know, he's going to come in after you. So I guess they still have occasional problems. You know, they'll close the shelter for a while. Davenport, that was the first shelter they rebuilt, and they actually put the chain link fence back on Davenport. That's the only one with the chain link fence.
It's probably because it's close to the road, right? It's got to have something to do with that.
No, at the time, they didn't realize the chain link fence was, you know, people were feeding. I guess they just didn't figure people would be feeding them through it, but they, you know, enough information, they figured out, hey, let's get rid of these fences, you know. People won't be feeding, bears won't come by then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would think the bears would maybe kind of gravitate to, well, okay, they're going to go where there's food. But, you know, you were talking about some of the more remote sections of the park earlier. Is there any part of the park that you haven't explored?
That I haven't? If there's a trail, I've been on it. There's one area that I do want to come down. I got a friend that works for the Park Service as a volunteer. And he asked me to come do this with him. He said, you're the only guy I can think of that would be crazy enough to do this. There's an old trail that comes off if you read Horace Kephart's book, the bear hunt section, there's a place that comes off of Rocky Top that comes straight down into Bone Valley. And that's right in that area where they're bear hunting, where Horace Kephart was in that our Southern Highlands. It's a fabulous book. I'm sure you probably read parts of it. It's an off-trail section that he said is just really just a lot of old building or old houses or used to be there, old home sites. He said it's fascinating what he's read and studied. So hopefully I'll get to see that part of the park. I mean, that's really a remote section down in the Bone Valley in that area.
Yeah, do you ever do any fishing when you're in the park, or do you pretty much stick to hiking?
No, you know, I don't, and I've always wanted to. I fished when I was younger, but I really have not stopped to do that, and I would love to. Maybe when I get time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have not fished in the park. I've got some buddies of mine that are dying to go up Hazel Creek. We've actually talked about doing a couple boat rides across Fontana and heading up in there, but haven't done it yet.
No, it's something I really want to add to my backpacking, but I just haven't done it.
All right, so JD, I'm going to close the podcast out with the big question. So you're ready?
Ready.
So, let me ask you first: your most major mishap. Whether it's in the backcountry, on the way to the Smokies, on the way home, like your most major mishap of all your trips to the Smokies?
Gosh, that's a tough question. I don't know. You know, I can't. You know, I really can't. So many times I've got there and said, you know, do I have my boots? Because I've hiked with people who didn't bring their boots. I've hiked with people that forgot their sleeping bag, going backpacking. There's been times where we got there and people forgot their food and water. I know one guy, so, you know, I've always just been so detailed about getting ready.
It's called having a list, which I work off of.
I know, you know, and as far as, you know, having an accident, I've been fortunate other than sliding that ditch one night. That's probably the worst in being in the park. We were coming out one night, one day after we met you guys from Atlanta, and a lady was killed by falling tree right behind us on 441.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was a huge storm. We were lucky to get out of the park. I really don't have anything memorial that I can think of.
So let me ask you a different question. If you had one day in the Smokies, what would you do?
Gosh, I'd hike.
Where? That's the question.
Oh, I'd probably hike up to Mount LeConte. I mean, that's just, I've never had a, you know, every time I've hiked up there, it's been wonderful. I think I've hiked to LeConte 28 times, and every time it seems like it's always wonderful.
So maybe you should tell the listeners about the facility up there, which I believe is a private facility, right? You can reserve cabins. I think it's incredibly hard to get them. Do you want to comment on that quickly?
Oh, it's a neat neat experience. If you don't want to backpack, you want to spend the night in the park. It's hard to get a reservation. You can get on the waiting list. But it's a log cabins, bunk style. I think it's $125 or $130 a night. They feed you breakfast, and then they have dinner. And they also offer wine at night. It's very rustic. The food's good. Of course, you're hungry. So, you know, I've yet to have a bad meal in the backcountry. That's one thing I've noticed. Even Mountain House tastes great. You know, we're eating freeze-dried food, and it's like the best stuff in the world.
Right.
But yeah, it's a nice accommodations. It's a fun day hike, and you always meet somebody fun and entertaining up there, and they are absolutely booked every night.
So for that price, how many people can get in one of those little cabins?
You know, when I've only stayed up there once, and I think we had one of the bigger cabins, and there was probably eight of us in there. Excuse me, there was probably eight of us.
Awesome. So you break it up by eight. It's not that much money, right?
No, it's $125 a person. So.
Oh, geez. Are you kidding?
No, if you want to take, that was when I did. That was 2 years ago. That's fine.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty expensive. Oh, well, you know, I guess you get a dinner and a breakfast. So that's two meals. And they serve wine. You can buy wine. And then they have a nice gift shop. You know, it's hard to, I wouldn't want to take my family. It'd be pretty expensive. But, you know, guys, it's fun. You go and play cards and do whatever, you know, at night. And it's heated. Right. They got gas heat. Back in the day, I understand they had fireplaces in each one, but you know, nobody's gonna go up there and cut wood. You can't cut wood in the park, so.
Hey, or you can go to Ice Water Spring Shelter for $8 a person, right?
And have just as much fun.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Hey, so on that topic, if you had, you know, a 2 day, one overnight, where would you go?
2 day, one overnight. Again, that would depend on the seasons, but you can't beat Laurel Gap going up Baxter, and it's hard to loop that hike. You can go up Baxter and out Gunter Fork, but that'd be a wonderful, wonderful night. Gosh, any of the shelters, you know, going up to Spence Field. We used to go up to Russell a lot, too. I love Russell Shelter.
Oh, yeah. Russell Field?
Russell Field, yeah. It was the last one on the AT rehabbed. So, I mean, it's really nice. Water can be a problem there. In the summertime, that spring really dries up. It's tough to get water sometimes. But in the wintertime, it's a wonderful shelter.
Yeah, I think I've only stayed there once. But, you know, next time you go to Laurel, you're going to have a bunch of people because they're going to have listened to this podcast.
So. Well, yeah, that's a tough trail. So, you know, once they climb up Baxter, that'll be the last time.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to find a way into here.
Hey, so let's talk about Trail Hard for a minute, because you were nice enough, JD, to hook me up with some Trail Hard stickers, some Trail Hard T-shirts. I think you have hats too, right?
Yes.
To talk about the, where the whole – I think you have some good logos and good designs there. Where did the whole concept come from?
Well, when I first started hiking in January 2008, like I said, I went up Rainbow Falls Trail. I was dressed in camo, wool, Gore-Tex. You know where I'm going here. Wool sweater, windstopper sweater. You know, I had this idea. It was 6 degrees, and we were climbing up Rainbow Falls. I thought we'd be cold. I hiked for about a half mile, and I was just literally dying, sweating, pouring out, and I was taking clothes off. And I didn't think I was going to get to the top. And I said to myself, I said, self, you have got to get trail hard if you're climbing Mount Rainier. And so every trail, that was my mantra. I had this mantra thing going, you got to get trail hard, got to get trail hard. And when I started out, I used to lift, you know, worked out all the time. And so I was heavy, close to 200 pounds probably then. And you say I'm down to 165 usually. And so at that, I just knew that I had to change my whole regime. And my whole workout thing was to become trail hard. You know, I wanted to be just – and so I pushed myself for 6 months to Mount Rainier. And my, like I said, my mantra was to be trail hard. And so after Rainier, I met this friend of mine, Ed, and we started hiking all the time together. And we both would say, you know, hey, trail hard. We've got to be trail hard. Or we'd call each other, trail hard, baby. So I think, see, I got to look into trademarking it and had a few people that said it was a great idea. And I had big plans for it, you know, making a trail hard Chevy truck. I knew there was Jeep had this trail something, trail rated or – and I talked to Chevrolet. I've talked to a couple of truck companies about doing it, or Jeep, or you know, something trail hard. But anyways, I just mentioned to a couple of people, and they're all excited about it. And so that's where I'm at. And now I got T-shirts, and of course, the logo. And I went to a friend of mine helped me design the logo. I wanted to have an ice axe. I started out with Karen's, but it was kind of overused and. I wanted to have a trail, you know, an ice axe in it, because that's really meant a lot to me, because that's what part of my training was, using the ice axe and being trail hard. And then, so I got this website, and that's where I'm at now. And then ran into some guys in Colorado who have really been pushing it with the, they're part of the original Mountain Gangsters, OMG group.
I love that.
Yeah. And so they're working on that too, the OMG. I met the original Mountain Gangsters and on Rainier, and so we pretty much every summer we get together and do some, you know, crazy stuff. Like last year was Denali, or this past year was Denali. Hopefully this year we're going to Whitney, Mount Humphreys, and in Nevada.
And then, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm pretty stoked about that. So, yeah, if anyone wants a T-shirt, they can call me. My number's on the website, or they can order through the website. But
So I'll give you a link on the podcast. What is your website? It's trailhard.net, right?
Trailhard.net.
Gotcha. And the original Mountain Gangster sticker, is that part of your trailer?
No, but I can get more of those.
I love that. That is classic.
Gangster, baby.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, I'll make sure I get some links on the site for you here.
You're going to be, right?
Yeah, yeah. All right, the two closing questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Ready.
Your absolute most favorite piece of trail gear.
Trail gear. God, I love gear. Oh, you should see. I put a picture of my backpack. I got 8 backpacks. That's how crazy I am about gear. Got 2 backpacking tents, a hammock. Gosh, my favorite piece that I always take. Oh, geez, Scott, Steve, that's a tough question. Yeah, because I love my backpacks. You know, stove. I love the jet boil, the titanium jet boil sleeping bag. I love the big Agnes system. I've got a new tent that I really like. It's the spur, copper spur. I actually carry a 2-man tent. I'm a little, you know, I'm not weight conscious right now, as much as some people. You know, of course, I always carry my flask.
with a little moonshine.
Yeah. Either that or the captain. Everybody's got a little captain in them.
You know, oh yeah.
Most of the people I've talked to have always had the captain.
You talking about Captain Morgan?
Captain Morgan. And we do the captain pose on top.
Perfect. All right, so last question. Are you ready, JD?
I'm ready.
Your wish list, man. What's on your wish list? What's next? What's next for JD Schlant?
Gosh. Next, I want to do Wyoming. It's got a little bit of glacier. It's a technical climb. It's
You talking about Wind Rivers?
Yeah. But the
yeah. Hey man, when you going?
High Point. It's
can I come?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. My wife will never let me.
Oh, it's gonna be fun. There's a glacier on it, so it'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, so this isn't backpacking. This is mountaineering.
Yeah, it's both. I mean, you got a pretty long approach. It's a four day backpacking trip.
Oh, sweet. Awesome.
The approach is pretty tough and pretty long, and then. You know, then you set up a base camp, and then you do your mountaineering one day, and then back to camp. But I just want to see that area too. You know, I want to go back to the Maroon Vales too. That's
God, I've been there. It's awesome, just outside of Aspen.
Yo, I love it.
Oh,
did you do the four loop pass?
Yes. Well, no, I didn't do the whole four loop. We did a 3-day kind of modified shorter version. But it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
Was that not absolutely unbelievable?
Blew me away.
Me too. I fell in love with that trail. I mean, I did that in 2010. Gosh, but I want to go back. I want to take a group here. I've got, you know, this group I lead hikes for. I want to take some of them back.
I've been, but for the listeners, my advice would be don't let the first 1 or 2 miles influence you because you got a bunch of day hikers. Once you lose the day hikers, it'll blow you away.
It'll blow you away. Once you get over that first pass, oh my gosh. We were out there in August and the Indian paintbrush, that's a beautiful wildflower, was there.
It is.
And the columbine was just, oh man. Then you dropped into that one meadow. I thought I was in Bonanza. You know the old Bonanza where they're riding the horses? It was incredible. Didn't see the elk, but ran into a backcountry ranger there, and he was telling me where the elk all were huddled up, and just incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Trout, you could walk in the pond, the beaver pond, which is full of brookies, which we want here in Tennessee, but they don't want the brookies out west. They want the cutthroat. But this trout were everywhere. Anyways, I got a long bucket list. We don't have time for my bucket list.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. If I was infinitely wealthy, I'd be in the mountains.
I'd be on the trail every day.
Yeah, I hear you. You and me both, man. Well, hey, JD, it's been great having you on the show. I can't thank you enough for sharing your Smoky Mountain experience with the crew here. And you know, I wish you your best on your third map. I know it's coming soon.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's, hopefully we'll get it done in April.
Yeah, that's impressive. So that'll be about, 27? That's more than that, right? You think that's like 15, 50? You think you're 4,500 on that, on mileage?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's crazy.
Damn.
You know,
no wonder you lost so much weight.
You know, you asked me about the gear. One of the best piece of gear I have is Zamberland boots. I got to throw a plug for them. Absolutely the best pair of boots I've ever worn.
Oh, yeah?
They're pricey. They're made in Italy. But I tell you what, they, you know, your feet, one thing you learn when you hike, obviously, is your feet are so important. If your feet aren't happy, you're not having a good hike.
Yeah.
And I've had really great success with Zamberland. I love them. They're a little bit heavier. I wear a lighter boot for day hikes, but for backpacking, that's my favorite piece of gear.
Well, that and your trail hard gear.
Well, yeah, you can't go on the woods without a trail hard shirt, right?
And your original mountain gangster sticker.
OMG, baby!
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks so much for being on the show, JD. I look forward to seeing you again here sometime. Absolutely. In the Smokies somewhere.
Absolutely. Hopefully we'll see you this summer, right?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a little hotter in the summer, but you'll definitely see me in the winter.
We'll hike high.
Yeah, that works. That counts for something.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, man, great talking to you, JD, and hope to see you soon.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the N2 Backpacking Podcast. This is Bird Shooter wishing you the best for your travels on the trail. Subscribe to this podcast, visit Apple's iTunes store, or download them directly at n2backpacking.com from the podcast tab on the secondary menu. Music from this podcast was provided by the John Zed Band. For more information on this Atlanta-based musician, visit his website at johnzed.com. That's johnzed.com. or search for his latest release through iTunes. This podcast is a production of N2 Backpacking and is copyrighted by N2 Ventures, Inc. For more information or to provide feedback or comments on this or future shows, please visit us at N2 Backpacking. That's the letter N, the number 2, backpacking.com.